Hi, everybody. Welcome to Here and Now. I'm Merrill Pepcorn. More news again on the half hour. In the second half of the program today, we're going to meet Eric Mitchell and to learn about his group, Repower North Dakota, the Alliance for Climate Protection. That's coming up later on. Dakota Datebook, of course, towards the end of the program. Before all of that, let's meet Tony Bender. Tony owns and writes for the Ashley Tribune and Wishick Star newspapers. He's an award-winning columnist who's published, Tony, how many books of columns do you have out there now?
I have 3 books of columns out, Merrill.
And has just now, we're not here to talk about those books of columns, but we are here to talk about his second novel just published. It's called The Last Ghost Dancer. It's available through Thomas Dunn Books, a division of St. Martin's Press. Okay, those remarks about that question about the columns, that was kind of my unofficial introduction. So now I will officially welcome you to the program.
Well, thanks, Merrill. It's great to be here again. Especially, this is kind of an exciting day for me because this is really my first novel, although it is the second published. And it's been, you know, almost a decade in the making, and so it's been a long, hard labor. And today, officially, we launched the book. So, and it's a boy. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that. I was confused for a while, but you know, which isn't a big surprise, Tony. I am easily confused, but because I've interviewed you about another novel. That one was titled If Every Month Were June. Then I read the blurb from your publisher, St. Martin Press, here. And they're referring to this book, The Last Ghost Dancer, as your first novel. So just a little, clear that up for me, would you please?
Okay, well, this is the book that I sat down to write 8 or 10 years ago, and it went through several edits, actually 7 edits, and I wrote a second novel. And then finally, with the third novel, If Every Month Were June, we found a publisher. And so that was the first one that was published, but that was actually my third novel. And I continued to float The Last Ghost Dancer out. And after the 7th edit, just really felt that this book needed to find a home and would find a home. And, of course, it did with Thomas Dunn and St. Martin. So it's the first book, but it's the second one published.
Well, I'll go along with that one, Tony. Now, are you still business partners with your wife in the newspaper and this book publishing business that you've been up to lately?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. We're going strong after 12 years with Redhead Publishing, mm-hmm. and still publishing in Ashley and in Wishick, and living out on the prairie and loving it.
Now, I have to tell you this. I got to fess up right off the bat here, Tony. Unlike your previous novel, If Every Month Were June, which I read cover to cover before we were even able to talk about it, I have not read this book completely. I've been looking through it today, but I apologize for that. You don't hear me, Merrill, doing these true confessions very often, but nonetheless, I look forward to reading it this week. We got a little time off, and I got some travel time, and that often seems to be good reading time, so I'll catch up with it then. In the meantime, heck, you not only read it, you wrote the darn thing, so people are going to find out all about it. The title of the book is The Last Ghost Dancer. That suggests a Native American theme. What is it about, Tony?
It's a coming-of-age novel, but the central character or the spiritual center of the book is an Indian medicine man, a Lakota named Joe Big Cloud. So this book has been described as a coming-of-age novel, a spiritual journey, and South Dakota Magazine saw it as kind of a mystery, and it does have a surprise ending. So the bonus here is that you haven't gotten to the end yet, and you can't possibly mess up the ending for all the people out there.
That's true. unlike doing a movie review or a book review, we can't do it because we don't know what is there yet. How did you settle on, and it's more than a come, I've read enough to know that it's more than a coming of age story, but how did you settle on sort of this vehicle, this means of telling your story, of writing this book?
Well, the reason it took 7 edits is because it was my first novel, and I sat down and really didn't know what my formula would be to write a novel. By the time I had written the third novel, I had discovered my method. But when I sat down to write this one, I really just sat down every morning at 5 o'clock, hot cup of coffee, and sort of got into a meditative mood and wrote it in a stream of consciousness fashion, which is, I think, which is why the language is written the way it is in the book. It's a little bit stream of consciousness. It's real literature, I think. But I just sat down and I just let the story come to me. And this story really, for a couple of years, just dominated my mind. It was in my mind at all times. I'd be driving and I'd be thinking about it. And there's an awful lot of thought and writing that went into it. And in my mind, I think that this book captures the heart and soul of small town Dakota. At least in the 70s or 60s, as well as any book that I've read.
Now, you are a humor writer. You've made your name writing humor. Your novel, If Every Month Were June, was very funny. Loved it. Exciting, fast-moving, all of that. You've won awards as a humor columnist. Is this book also funny?
You know, I think it has its moments. I think that there are times it's kind of a wry funny. The narrator, Bones, is telling the story as an old man from the future. He's looking back to the summer of 77. And Bones, up to this point, the summer of 77, has kind of been sort of a hapless character, best known for dropping an Edsel off a hoist at the local gas station. But this is a summer that really changes everything for him. This perfect girl shows up in town for the summer, and this is the girl that he falls in love with and loves enough really to let go. So it's kind of a little bit of heartbreak in the story, but also he sort of discovers that maybe he is somebody greater than he imagined, if somebody as great as she chose him. And so it's kind of a revelation for him that summer. And also his relationship with Joe Big Cloud, who is more than a medicine man. He's almost, well, he is literally a miracle worker.
Oh, no, Bones, he's just like the rest of us guys, finding his self-worth in the affirmation of a good-looking girl who just moved into town. Hang on, Bones. Now, the setting, as you mentioned, Tony, is Pale Butte. Now, let's get this Pale Butte thing. There were two things I was a little confused about. Well, you know, that's not bad for me, I guess. But one was whether this was your first, second novel, where that was. We got that cleared up. Now, the setting, Pale Butte. There are references to Pale Butte being in North Dakota, but geographically in the book, it's South Dakota. So tell me a little bit about Pale Butte, the town the story is set in.
Well, it's set in the south, right on the South Dakota border. Really, I grew up, and I've spent a lot of my life on the border, on one side of the border or the other. You know, as long as there are no extradition issues, it's easy to hop back and forth. I had this book imagined really as Frederick, South Dakota, but I so loved living in Headinger, North Dakota. Mm. I loved the cowboys. I loved the West. I loved that Butte topography out there, and so I decided to call it Pale Butte, which is sort of an homage to White Butte, which is the highest point in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is a friend of mine, Harriet Howe, who taught school in Headinger and read the book, took her science class out one day, and they named a butte Pale Butte. So now there really is a Pale Butte. It's official. Harriet Howe has named that butte. So the book has inspired the naming of a butte in North Dakota, or I'm not sure if it's in South Dakota, because Headinger is right on the border, mm-hmm. So it may be down in South Dakota.
Well, who knows? This may be the long-term result of the book, and if that was it, I'm sure you'd be happy to know that indeed a butte was named, inspired by your book. Yeah, very
well,
nice.
You know, Hemingway probably got a mountain, but I'll settle for a butte.
Perhaps you have a little higher aspirations for the book, but you know, hey, if that was it, what the heck? That's pretty doggone good. I got to tell you, Tony, I did a show. I was out in Medora. I go out there once in a while, do a show usually every year, and I came back through Hettinger. The folks at the museum invited me down there, and that was a great stop, great visit. And then I drove east from Hettinger to McIntosh, I believe it was, or maybe it was Lemon. And that's that highway that goes right along the border. And I know what you mean there, Tony. And for people who live there, that border is almost invisible. It doesn't. The South Dakota border people go up to North Dakota to do business, and vice versa. It really, really doesn't mean much when you're really living there. But at any rate, right. I traveled east and then north on the road. I believe it is from McIntosh to the Flasher area, the highway, the big east-west highway that's near Flasher, then eventually to Mandan. Oh, my gosh. Talk about that beautiful countryside.
It really is. It's the West is alive and well out there in that country. It's just a beautiful place to travel through. And, of course, I lived out there in that Hettinger area for about 6 or 7 years and really – that town still has a big place in my heart.
Yeah, and it is always will be beautiful, has been for many years before Hettinger came along, and will be for years after Hettinger is perhaps long gone. Why the year, Tony? We're talking about, well, we'll just for the sake of reference, something of a coming-of-age novel set in this North Dakota, South Dakota small border town. Why 1977, Tony?
Well, I don't know if it was, I think it's probably because it was about the era that I was really coming of age. The 70s were the time that I was growing up and I was experiencing some of the things that were in the book. And, really when I was a kid, I mean, long before I knew I was going to be a writer, my friends, we had this really tight clique of very good, loyal, lifelong friends. And they all seemed to know that I was going to write someday. And they always used to tell me that I needed to tell their story. And this isn't exactly their story, but I think that they'll recognize little wisps and echoes of the life that we led back in the 70s, coming of age. And it was a great time, and it was a great little town that I grew up in. The characters were very big. And I recognized that at the time. I don't think many kids do, but I was a very aware, I was very aware of how special this place was. And I was very aware of how special the people and the time was. And so I never forgot it. It was always held very dear in my heart. And this is really a tribute to those days. And anybody who grew up in a small town in the Dakotas during that era is going to recognize it.
What was that small South Dakota border town you grew up in?
In Frederick, South Dakota.
Oh, in Frederick, yeah. And I seem to recall this from our previous conversations, Tony, that, yes, you were aware of those people in that small town of Frederick, but and even especially the old-timers, which is kind of unusual for a young kid maybe, right?
Well, it is because during the summer, a lot of my friends were, farm kids, especially the guys, and there weren't really many people exactly my age during the summer who were around.
Yeah.
We'd get together for baseball practice, things like that.
Sure.
But I hung out with these old guys on the benches on Main Street, and they were just a wonderful source of information, and I learned so much, but they were just really big characters. There was Dale Doty, who used to drive around on this ancient pickup with his dog at his side, and he would haul garbage. Uh-huh. I mean, this truck. I hauled garbage with him one time because he needed a helper, and after every block or so, he'd pull out a bottle of schnapps. It was just, that was the type of town it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was just bigger than life, and those characters Well, they're really just local legends around there, I think.
And even as they were serving as a source of inspiration for you, and I'm sure a lot of your writing today is because you were open to that sort of thing, just sort of soaked it in as you were a kid. You undoubtedly, the young Tony Bender, knocking around Frederick, South Dakota, were quite a source of amusement for them, no doubt. That's why they let you hang around, Tony, I'm sure.
Well, I was, you know... We had a family of six kids, and so there was no allowance to be had. You know, I didn't come from a wealthy family, so if you wanted to make some bucks, you had to hustle. So I would sell Grit Magazine, which would come, you know, or the newspaper would come once a week, and I had 32 subscribers.
Wow.
But I'd get 50 papers, and the rest of them I would hustle on Main Street to the farmers. And so, you know, you developed quite a rap. And I remember one time I tried to sell it to Werner Group at the elevator, and I sold him one. I came uptown, and he was there again, and he said, "Aren't you going to try to sell me a paper?" I said, "I just did." He said, "That was my brother." Well, I knew it wasn't his brother, but I figured if he was going to give me the 15 cents, I'd take it, you know, and so I did. But that
Yeah, nice. Now, that says something about Tony Bender, too. You got a little salesman in you for a kid to sell 50, by way of subscription and just street sales, 50 issues of Grit Magazine once a week. That ain't bad in Frederick, South Dakota, Tony. You got a little gumption there as well.
Well, we peaked at 52, I sold Christmas cards, and I sold seeds, and I raked lawns, and I did all of those things. It was really good for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it did help me develop confidence in I think in life is sales in general.
All right. Our guest is Tony Bender. We're talking about his book, The Last Ghost Dancer. We're talking about his memories, and a lot of this book is memories as well. And when we come back from this very short pause, I want to talk about the words you say in the preface, and you're asking the readers to kind of open up their minds and maybe just consider some things they perhaps hadn't before they started reading this book. So we're back with Tony Bender in a minute.
You're listening to Prairie Public, a news, information, and music service in partnership with North Dakota State University.
Support for Hear It Now is provided by Partners for Affordable Energy, supporting affordable, reliable, and increasingly clean electricity from North Dakota Coal. On the web at www.powerofcoal.com. And by the North Dakota Education Association and its Ready Child Initiative, reminding North Dakota's caring adults that our kids need us. Further information is available at readychild.org.
Alrighty, we're back in Hear It Now. I'm Merrill Pepcorn. Glad to be along here with you today. We've got news coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes on the half hour. We're going to keep our first guest of the day into the second half of the program, and that guest is Tony Bender. He is the owner of and editor of the Ashley Tribune, the Wishick Star newspapers. He is a columnist, and he is an author. We're talking about his latest book, published by Thomas Dunn Books, an imprint of St. Martin's Press. The name of the book is The Last Ghost Dancer. And Tony, in the introduction of the book, I don't know what it is officially, preface perhaps, but it's a little deep, Tony, and you're asking for quite a commitment or an openness. Before you even get going into the book, you're talking about some themes and some things, you're asking the reader to kind of be part of that. And I want you to talk about that, and I want you to talk about how an apocalypse might not necessarily mean the end of the world, but the meaning of that word as well, and how it fits into this book.
So we've got a coming-of-age novel with an apocalyptic theme.
Yeah, yeah.
So now you've spilled the beans on that, but that's okay.
Somebody pick up the beans in here. Hurry.
Well, I did incorporate a rather powerful dream. And I have to tell you that I'm a mystic. I'll admit it. I probably always have been as a child. And so this book does have kind of a mystical theme. Mm-hmm. But in 1983, I had a dream that was really of the apocalypse, and I recognized the man in the dream as an Indian, a very tall Indian, who I believe to be a spirit guide, you know, or an angel, you know, whatever you want to say. But I had this very vivid, powerful dream. It came out of nowhere, and in this dream, I saw, let's just call it, you know, the apocalypse, or as the Lakota would call it, you know, the fifth world. You know, that they believe that there's been four worlds, and then most, I would say, most Native American cultures have a similar belief. Anyway, the fifth world is the new world. It's been cleansed. Mother Earth has been cleansed. The buffalo are plenty. We go back to a simpler time and a better time. But anyway, I had this dream, and there was a particular scene in this dream that I saw. And one day, after I'd moved to Denver, Colorado, I was driving in the mountains and came upon that scene. And that was stunning to me, because I'd never been there before. And so that really shaped the way I look at the world, because I had dreamed something that I later saw in real life. And so I did kind of incorporate that into the book.
Speaking of those Native American themes and that spiritual world that you're referring to, you worked with Joseph Marshall III on this book. Tell us who he is and describe your working relationship with him.
Well, Joseph Marshall III, I really didn't work with anybody on this book, but what I did, as I said, is I wrote this stream of consciousness, and I wrote about this Joe Big Cloud really having no background or education on what a medicine man mm-hmm. would do or how he would act. And after I wrote the book, I was looking for someone who could authenticate that character, because I really didn't want to be disrespectful.
Right, right.
And Joe loved the book. And in fact, it was his wife who I contacted first, and I explained what I was trying to do, and that I didn't want to be disrespectful. And she said, you know, most people wouldn't care. And I said, well, I do. That made an impression on them. And Joe has always loved this book, and I think he's as happy as I am that it's been published.
What's your main goal in writing the book, Tony?
Well, I think everybody, writers or not, all think they have a book in them.
Yeah, well,
and,
yeah.
And so this was the book that I really felt driven to write. It was, you know, I felt honor bound to write this as to honor my friends and to honor that time. And then also, I felt like I had some things to say. I thought maybe I had learned a few things along the way, and maybe through my mistakes, I could, I think you always hope that something you write is either going to entertain or make somebody's life a little bit better, or just maybe make them think.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
No, I think that sums it up.
Yeah. We're honored that, you're on our show, and I mean that you're on our show today. It is launch day, the official launch day of Tony's book, The Last Ghost Dancer. So I will take this as a compliment for being shunned for a cover quote on your story. on the book. I mean, you got a quote from Senator Byron Dorgan. You got a quote from Big Eddie Schultz, host of MSNBC's The Ed Show. You've got a quote from Joseph Marshall. I understand that. You relied on him. You confided and spoke with him and John Records Landecker, radio legendary disc jockey. And so in lieu of being shunned for that quote, I'll accept the honor and the compliment of you coming on our show today, Tony, on launch day.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Merrill, is I didn't know any of your skeletons in your closet. Otherwise, but I had the goods on all the rest of these guys.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you just ask around Wishick there a little bit. Something might come up. Okay. We're going to continue with our guest, Tony Bender, talking about his book. We'll give you the schedule, too. Tony's got some good, fun things here coming up, and we'll talk about that on Hear It Now right after the news. All right, we're back in Hear It Now. I'm Merrill Pepcorn. Dakota Date Book coming up towards the end of the program. We'll visit a little bit later on this half hour with Eric Mitchell, State Director for the Alliance for Climate Protection and Repower North Dakota. Until then, let's visit again with Tony Bender. This is the official launch day of Tony's latest novel, The Last Ghost Dancer. Kind of getting things going here with this interview today. And Tony, are you at home right now?
Actually, I am in an undisclosed location in Bismarck.
Well, I thought I was going to ask, because if you were at home in Ashley, you'd have to get on your high horse here and ride up to Bismarck soon, because you have an appearance tonight in Bismarck. And tell us about that.
Right. I'm going to be at Barnes and Noble for sort of a meet and greet and signing at 6:30 tonight. And we'll go until the crowds thin out. Hopefully we'll have a good turnout for that.
And a couple of events I want you to mention tomorrow, Wednesday. Of course, the Ashley Tribune, your newspaper in Ashley, going to be there from 1 to 3 tomorrow?
Yes, I'll be there. And we haven't, you know, to tell you the truth, that one kind of slipped through.
Yeah.
I was going to push that back a little bit, mm-hmm. but they've already, I did get a couple of books in, and we've already had people knocking on the door for them. So I will be in the office, you bet.
All right, and that's just kind of a setup. I want you to explain the following event you have scheduled on that day for Danzig, North Dakota. You have it there? Do you have it in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me. You're going to have
to
read it.
Okay, I'm going to give it to you. Then you're going to have to explain it, Tony. Tomorrow, in Danzig, North Dakota, Memorial Ballpark there, the Venturia Snipe Hunters versus the Zealand Mud Ducks. Tony, our guest, is going to throw out the first pitch, sing the national anthem, and umpire the game.
Okay. Well, Danzig is a community that now has one family of beekeepers that live there right now. And this was my attempt, because the schedule looked so sparse this week that I thought I needed to flesh it out a little bit. And you know, writers are supposed to be colorful, Merrill. So
yes.
That is really why that was in there.
Now, that's the Tony Bender that we all know and love. Umpiring a game, singing the national anthem, and throwing out the first pitch for the Venturia Snipe Hunters versus the Zealand Mud Ducks baseball game. And then, of course, Thursday this week, you'll be up at Zanbro's. Friday, you'll be at Barnes & Noble at UND in Grand Forks. And Saturday, the Little Professor in Aberdeen. So that is terrific. And then, of course, again, late Saturday night, you'll be at the at the Duck Inn in Venturia, where their motto is.
Yeah, where the motto is Duck In and Waddle Out.
Oh, that'll be Saturday night. At any rate, it's coming into rave reviews. I want to talk a little bit about the publishing experience. Who published the other novel, If Every Month Were June?
Now, that was Fulcrum.
Yeah.
Published If Every Month Were June. That was published in 2008.
Yeah. And now this book by Thomas Dunn Books, an imprint of St. Martin's Press, a very reputable publisher. How did you get hooked up with them?
You know, it's like anything. It's just persistence and knocking on doors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the interesting thing is that Fulcrum didn't really like Ghost Dancer. You know, admittedly, it wasn't in its polished form, but that's just the way it goes in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Is you it you I mean, you know how it is. On a particular day, something may read better than on another day. These people look at many, many manuscripts, and you just got to get the right person on the right day that appreciates what you're doing. And so if there's people out there that are writing and you've been shot down, you're going to get shot down a lot. But if you really believe that you've got something, you've just got to be patient, and you've got to wait for somebody to discover it. And that's really what happened with Thomas Dunn. We just got a simple email from him, and it was just, I like this very much. And that was it. And it took about almost 2 years, but it's published. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think you stretched a little bit. You took a little bit of a chance yourself by going on beyond our conceptions of who Tony Bender is and what he writes about. And somebody picked up on this book and published it. And I think it's terrific for you to be able to maybe spread your wings just a little bit from what you really made your name in. So good for you.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that I had a reputation as a humor writer. And that's great. I like to write humor. But humor is so closely related to tragedy that they really are twins. And I think you need to be able to write in both of those veins. And I like writing in a serious manner as well.
Well, I got to let you go here, but just a quick compliment. I like writing like this phrase I'm about to read when you talk about a car pulling into a driveway in a gravel driveway, when you write, the pop of a stone flung into the air by the edge of a tire. Simple little phrase, but I like that style of writing, and I appreciate your being able to do that. And also, I need to know, Tony, what the heck is Ethiopian Yirgacheffe?
That's Ethiopian Yirgacheffe.
Yirgacheffe. See what I mean? What is it?
It's coffee. It's probably the first coffee known to man, and it's a wonderful winey tasting coffee. We serve it at Jitters, our little coffee shop that is located with the Ashley Tribune in Ashley.
Well, is it strong then if it's served at Jitters? I bet it is.
No, it's just a beautiful coffee. It has a little bit of a wine aftertaste and very, very unlike any other kind of coffee.
Well, I think, is it Bones who in the epilogue or near the end of the book is enjoying a cup of Ethiopian Yirgacheffe? I think it's...
Now you haven't quite finished the book then, but you're getting pretty close.
Yeah, I'm getting there, Tony. Thank you for writing the book. Thanks for coming along here on launch day. You have a great week as you go touring the state promoting it, and we will visit with you soon. Thank you, Tony Bender.
Thank you.
And again, your next chance to see Tony, really, Barnes & Noble tonight, 6:30 p.m., and then later on, Zanbro's Thursday in Fargo, Friday, Barnes & Noble in Grand Forks, and Saturday, The Little Professor in Aberdeen. Tony Bender, The Last Ghost Dancer. Look for it online or in your bookstore. We're back on Hear It Now after this.